Sextortion is a serious and increasing crime. The threat of sharing of private, personal, often intimate information.
Andrew Wolfe Murray is a former Metropolitan Police officer protecting public figures in the UK.
We've hacked your computer. We've got incriminating material about you. If you don't send money, we are going to release that to your wife.
Dr. Frank Farnham has extensive experience of assessing risk, managing and treating mentally disordered offenders.
Now, in terms of AI and deep fake, more and more information can be created. Anyone could be a victim of sextortion.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Fame by Farah & Co. In this series, we explore a range of threats to reputation and privacy. We'll be talking to leading experts about how best to manage these threats and lessen their impact. Welcome to this podcast about sextortion. I'm Atalie Matthews and I'm a lawyer in the reputation management team at Farah & Co. Now, there are a range of strategies for handling this type of situation, such as involving the police or instructing a lawyer, as it is a serious offence. But anyone facing a threat like this is likely to benefit considerably from getting practical advice from experts and psychologists, whether or not they end up going to law. So I'd like to start by asking you, Andrew, what is sextortion and why are we talking about it?
Sextortion is effectively a serious and increasing crime and involves the threat of distribution or sharing of private, personal, often intimate data or information if you, as the victim, doesn't do something in return. So it's effectively a coercive or conditional threat. Essentially, it's a form of blackmail. Often involves the demand for some kind of payment in money is the most obvious and simplest way, but it can be any form of demand. It could be for someone to change their behavior, do something that they wouldn't ordinarily do, or in some cases share more private information. It often involves third parties, so family or friends could be involved, either as the potential recipients of that sensitive information, or maybe they're part of the threat as well.
Like a threat to share it with somebody's spouse
exactly,
or something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yeah. So as you rightly say, it's on the increase. A lot of international law enforcement agencies are recognising it more and more and define it very much as such.
Sounds like an absolutely horrible thing to experience. What kind of people is this happening to? And you know, how do they end up in this position? And conversely, what kind of people are doing this to them and why?
Essentially, anyone could be a victim of sextortion. It doesn't matter on your gender, your age, your ethnicity. It's about control and fear. It's about the information that's been made available. Of course, some people are more attractive as victims in terms of perhaps their wealth, their status, whether they're high profile, whether they've got something to lose, as it were. Others might be more naive or maybe succumb to threat, more prone to emotional stressors. So you get that a lot from young people, the way they share information online. They also may be more prone to panic and react and respond immediately rather than seeking outside help. And individuals who are risky by nature, perhaps they engage in more risky behaviours, whether that's transactional relationships or extramarital affairs, will obviously put themselves as potential targets.
I see, and as I understand it, I mean, you might actually be dealing with a real person who's blackmailing you and sending you these messages, or actually the person who seems to be the person in the image or on the social media account might not be that person at all. Is that right?
Exactly right. So I think, and that's the better way of looking at sextortion, is who are the people engaging in the blackmail? You could have individuals, strangers who are just there for criminal intent, all the way through to big organized criminal gangs. They take up the process of getting that data, getting that information however they can, whether that's pretending to be someone else online and trying to extract it out of you, or sending in Trojan viruses into your emails, getting you to click links, which then releases all your private data.
Right.
But then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got individuals who might be known to the victim. They might be a little closer to home, whether they're ex-partners, friends, colleagues, former acquaintances, things like that. So individuals who've actually got that data and potentially some kind of grudge or resentment towards the individual. How they got the data in the first place is absolutely relevant. Did the victim send it consensually? Have they mined it through some kind of, as I say, virus or hacking?
Well, do they have the information at all,
exactly.
Apparently?
Yeah, I mean, so many times people are being threatened in this sort of way, and there's absolutely no evidence or anything that...
They haven't got a naked photograph, or they haven't got the material they say they've got.
And what we read about now in terms of AI and deep fake is whether more and more information can be fabricated or created, which leans into that. But I think ultimately risk and threat in this kind of context comes down to motivation. Why is the person doing it and what do they want out of it?
Right, well, Frank, perhaps you can talk to us a bit about, firstly, the kind of psychological effect this is going to have on somebody as a victim, and then what sort of motivation you see in the cases you work on.
This sort of behaviour has enormously deleterious effect on the victim psychologically. The very high rates of anxiety and depression, sometimes even frank post-traumatic stress disorder. Individuals can really spiral out of control almost and start to believe that, you know, the world has come to an end, engage in some catastrophization where they feel like, you know, that they have no control of this situation. Because initially there's a very strong power dynamic. The individual seems to have all the information and the individual victim feels powerless. One of the reasons why I think it's quite important at an early stage to get some help, to actually try to put some context on the effect of the behaviour and on the behaviour itself. As regards motivation, well, some individuals are going to be purely motivated by money. Organised crime groups who perhaps will send out a mass distribution of material saying something along the lines of, we've hacked your computers, we've got incriminating material about you. If you don't do X, Y, or Z, send X, Y, Z amount of money, we are going to release that to your, you know, to your best friends or to your wife. Those individuals probably don't have information about you actually, but it may be that if you had engaged in some risky activity or something coincidentally had happened, that you might make a false connection with and think, oh,
they're just trying it on. They might not actually have anything about you, but it seems real and they seem to have something.
Exactly. Another variant of that organised crime scenario is where an individual or a group of individuals pretend to be a person of interest, engages you in perhaps chat and then more and more intimate behaviour, leading to you actually sending an image in the belief that actually you're sharing intimate images with a real person, but actually discovered actually that you're sharing with criminals. And again, they may move on. If you don't respond to them, they may move on to try it again with somebody else. From a psychological perspective, the more interesting cases are the ones where the victim does know the perpetrator. And there can be a variety of scenarios where that happens. Rejected ex-partners, somebody that you've been in a relationship with, may decide that they want to try to reform the relationship in a very strange way, and it's an odd way to go about it, to be threatening, blackmail or sextortion.
Is that really what could be in somebody's head? Like, I'm trying to get this person back into a relationship.
And it's almost yes, exactly. And it's almost a parody of the relationship. For some people, having that contact, having that link, and the fact that you're going to respond might be enough to tide them over. And they may say they want money, but in fact, what they're wanting is increasing contact. Sometimes there are going to be scenarios where an individual who you were in a relationship with, perhaps an extramarital affair, something of that nature, you know, threatens to tell your wife. And then a difficult decision has to be made about how you deal with that. Mm. Perhaps in some scenarios it's better to get in front of that by actually telling your wife, but that's obviously a matter for the client to try to decide. But some of those scenarios where the individual you were in a relationship with was perhaps slightly less emotionally stable, there can be all sorts of reasons why they're wanting to do this, which aren't purely financially driven. They may just want to cause you pain. They might want to try and share their pain with you.
It's actually their distress and pain
that they are projecting onto you. Threats are interesting. So sometimes people make a threat simply to enjoy the effect it has on the victim.
Such as, if you don't pay this, I'm going to tell your wife or your boss, or I'm going to put this on the internet.
And then imagining how the effect that has on the victim might give somebody pleasure.
Right.
Sometimes it's to share their own pain, as we've said. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a threat is simply a clear declaration of what they're going to do. They threaten to send this material to your boss or to your wife, and that's what they're going to do. And sometimes people will put their threat in first, if you like. They're quite paranoid and they think that you are going to do something to them, so they threaten you first.
So it's obviously really quite a high stakes situation. Are there any obvious do's and don'ts? You know, what kind of advice do you give people faced with this kind of behaviour?
The first things first is do not engage with the blackmailer. I know that, as Frank said, you know, this is about control. People can become very emotional, very stressed, and can often dive into a flat spin effectively. And that leads to panic, and it leads to people thinking they need to be proactive and do something and negotiate. But actually, the number one thing you should do is stop, take a breath, think about what's going on, and take a step back.
That's really interesting and actually quite counterintuitive, isn't it?
Exactly.
Because if you're faced with a threat, especially if someone's sending you lots of messages and it's escalating, you must be, you know, particularly if you are wealthy and you are high profile and the prospects for you of somebody releasing information online, you know, could be absolutely devastating. Frankly, you know, the temptation to pay up must sometimes be quite strong. I mean, is that ever an idea or a possibility?
No, I think, I mean, as a first response, paying up is never the right thing. I mean, as I was saying, taking a step back allows you to get some objectivity, to seek advice, whether that's legal advice, law enforcement, or threat risk managers like us. It's about giving you some context, not least because, you know, it provides objective, experienced view of the matter, but also it's, you know, taking a step back is very unlikely to change the risk. The person is making a threat because they want something in return. So they need you to be on the hook. They need you to be maintaining that contact.
They're trying to pull you in.
Yeah, very rarely would they make a threat and then immediately do what they're threatening unless they wanted to. I think on those case by cases, you know, there are so many factors, indicators, things that need to be looked at, which will determine the overall risk. Mm. What's being threatened? What information do they have? Who are they? What's their relationship to you as the victim? Do they have what they say they have? All of these things we've discussed, and many, many more factors must be looked at to develop a proper strategy.
Are there any telltale signs that something is escalating and, you know, the risk is getting greater, perhaps actually for your safety as well?
Yes. I mean, I think the more insistent someone becomes, the more preoccupied they are, the more disinhibited, perhaps irrational they are. And I know Frank will have something to say about that, but I think just on in terms of the initial management, what I would say is prevention is better than cure. I think if you can think about your private intimate data in the same way you would with any other personal data, trying not to publish or giving out, you know, explicit images, private data, particularly to people you don't know properly. Think about your information about you and your privacy in the same way you do with your passport, your bank details. It's, as you mentioned at the beginning, this is absolutely part of the cybercrime family and should be, the same precautions should be taken in that regard.
Yeah, I think that's...
Yes, I mean, when you send money via your bank app, the bank usually pops up a little, pop-up to say, you know, are you sure? Is this person credible? Have you gone through some checks? And you really need to try to introduce that into your own thinking when making a decision about sending something that might be, you know, an intimate image or material that could come back in some way, shape or form
it's
to
true,
bite
we
you.
We don't tend to think of personal information in the same way as we do our bank details or the security code for our phone or our burglar alarm or whatever it is. But actually, if you stop yourself sending it in the first place, you're automatically massively reducing the risk of this happening to you, although you've said that some people don't actually have any information at all. They're just pretending.
No, that's right. I mean, so I think there's two points there. One is you never really know where the material's going. Mm. If you send something out into the ether, you're never really sure where it's going to end up, and that needs to be taken very seriously. The other is that some people are going to be making false allegations, and that could be because of their own mental state. There are some individuals who are frankly deluded and very mentally ill and will make false allegations about a famous person or someone in the public eye. It may be that somebody is an ex-partner or somebody is associated with you, and for some reason they want to embarrass you. They don't actually have any material, but they threaten to say something that will damage your reputation. And what's interesting about that is that those individuals have got false material are more likely to release it than those that actually do have real material on you. In a way, if you've got real images or real material, once you've posted that or sent that, you've shown your hand, and you can no longer really.
And you're more likely to hold on to it.
Yeah, to keep it to use. But if you're making false allegations, you can send those out, and if they don't get the required response, you can always make more false allegations.
Because there's an endless supply of them, because
exactly,
they're not real.
Because they're not real, and they are nonetheless can be reputationally very damaging. Mm-hmm. So it's important to try to understand the motivation of the individual, why they're doing that. Are they simply very angry at you for some reason and are just producing false material because they just want to hurt you for some reason? Are they frankly mentally ill and you need to think about why it is that they seem to be deluded about you? And that's where I think thinking about threat assessment and the interrelationship between someone's mental state can be very useful. Because ultimately, one's interested in the nature of the relationship between the victim and the perpetrator, the nature of the material that the person is threatening, whether it's real or not real, and what their motivation is for doing it. Is it simply financially motivated, in which case that's, you know, in some ways slightly more straightforward, or is it arising from some other desire to seek proximity to the person, to hurt them because you feel you need to punish them for something they've done to you?
I see. Well, what I'm hearing very clearly from you both is some, you know, to take a step back and not jump in and respond and try and negotiate, certainly in the first instance. But what if the perpetrator doesn't give up? What if they keep messaging you and they keep making threats and it gets worse and worse? You know, in your experience, is it generally advisable to involve the police or get lawyers on board?
The longer a period of behaviour persists, and as particularly if it's becoming more intense, if the person's not going away having been ignored or having been told no, then of course it starts to cross over into that sort of fixated behaviour. So people who are behaving in an irrational way, becoming more obsessive, focused on their cause. And again, it crosses over into, as Frank was saying, that perhaps the people that have more of a personal issue here, it's a deliberate attempt. This victim was chosen because of who they are and what they represent to that perpetrator. So yeah, there are lots of options, but as we mentioned earlier, paying straight away is never going to be the right one. That
no.
That gives off so many bad signals as a starter. You know, if it's someone who's after financial gain, it's that mind that needs to be kept being.
They might just ask you for
exactly,
more.
Exactly, it'll keep going.
Yeah.
And if it's someone who just wants to cause emotional control, well, they know you're giving them all the sort of credence and you're admitting to the value that that threat has over you.
That so, they hold the power.
Exactly. So I think there are numerous ways that you should be looking at that behaviour. But ultimately, if it's going on, if it doesn't look like it's going away, then you absolutely need to, and should be getting third-party help and some kind of support. For those lone strangers, for those kind of organised criminal gangs, absolutely law enforcement is the right way to go. Just know that you are, if you don't know the threatener, the blackmailer, it's highly likely that it's part of a group or even if it's an individual.
You're not alone in being targeted.
Exactly. You will not be the only one who's receiving this. So don't put your head above the parapet and be the one that responds.
Right.
Make sure, if they're not evidencing that they have any information, that's another telltale sign that they might not or probably
sometimes
don't.
Sometimes they might show you perhaps one thing that they've got, right?
And, exactly.
Or other times they might not show you anything, that's because they haven't got anything.
Well, for threateners, there's no risk in showing you what they've got about you. It's about,
yeah.
You know, the threat is to show everyone else. So always be wary if someone doesn't evidence what they're saying they've got.
And I think you have to have an honest conversation with yourself about whether or not it's likely they do have material. So obviously if it's an ex-partner and you have shared intimate videos or intimate pictures, you know they've got material. You then need to think about their motivation for wanting to extort money or favours or change of behaviour, what it is they're trying to do. For those other cases where it feels like the person's been on a fishing expedition, frankly, to try and snag you, you have to be careful that you don't spiral out of control, as Andrew sort of suggested, and start believing there's material where it doesn't exist. And sometimes it's useful to sit down with somebody to think objectively about whether or not there's a reality to this scenario.
So if it's someone you think you do know and it's obviously, you know, a disgruntled former spouse or something like that, then your own knowledge of their psychology is pretty powerful, actually.
Yes, exactly. And then we've said, and I think it's right, that the general message should be that you don't simply pay, because all of that usually does is encourage somebody to continue to demand money. But there might be scenarios, and it has to be on a case-by-case basis, with very careful analysis, where you were in a relationship with somebody, you know they're emotionally quite stable individuals, they've made a request for money. It's inappropriate, obviously, but you might decide pragmatically that the most sensible thing to do with assistance from lawyers is to actually pay them. But that's a careful decision you have to make, because there's always going to be the chance they'll come back for more. And there's always the chance that actually money isn't the main motivator. Money's nice, but what's really motivating them is continued contact. And by paying them, it's a very strong reinforcer that you're very interested.
There is a relationship.
And you're going to continue to form a relationship, you know, be in a relationship with them.
What I'm hearing from you both is that whilst it's an absolutely horrendous thing to be targeted in this way, and it might feel that you're completely alone and there is no way out and you're going to face public humiliation, actually, if you start to break down the threat and analyse it, the real actual risk might be a lot less than you think, and that there are practical ways of assessing it and managing it. And so, you know, there is hope, essentially, if you are put in this position. And it's extremely advisable to seek advice from people such as yourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the fear and the emotional stress is often completely disproportionate to the actual risk. So third parties, people with expertise in this, can really give you that objective view, calm the situation down right from the word go, and give you some real practical advice as how to help that. How that could work, it depends on the case and depends on the situation. But of course, you know, with the criminals, as we said, if there's an obvious crime being committed, to challenge that robustly, unequivocally, show that it holds no concern to you and threat, and going back with a really forceful response is great and the absolute right thing to do, particularly on those strangers who are just doing it for financial gain. Obviously, those individuals who are maybe extremely wealthy or have a high profile, have a celebrity, and they're concerned about their profile and how this will affect them, and perhaps a more nuanced look. But again, if it's just someone out for financial gain, then it should be dealt with robustly. I think having lawyers is not just about treating the risk and the threat, but it's about, think about the contingency. Make sure everything's in place should that information be leaked anyway. Because ultimately you could be dealing with someone who's unstable, disinhibited, emotional themselves, and might just release it no matter what.
So we have to be ready with strategies for getting this taken down from, you know, Twitter or Facebook or whatever.
Exactly.
And there are ways of doing that. And I know that you have, you know, relationships with the social media companies and things like that.
Yeah, I think there's plenty that you can do proactively. And that, for the client, for the victim, is hugely empowering.
A real relief to know that even if they do that.
So there's that aspect, whether it's using the police, whether it's using lawyers, whether it's using an assessment company or consultancy like ours, just to get yourself an overview and make sure you're not the one who's responding in an emotional way.
And to remind, you know, individuals might, for example, threaten to send material to national newspapers, that sort of thing. Well, one, national newspapers are unlikely to publish that because it's release of private material. But also, if you do engage lawyers, they may be in a position to remind those national newspapers of their obligations, for example, which is also, I think, you know, very relevant. So it's about trying to understand what are the likely worst-case outcomes in terms of what could be released, how to take that down, how to manage your own mental state in terms of we all have a tendency to catastrophize and to think it's
be easy to catastrophize in a situation like
Of course, and think about practical, pragmatic solutions. Ultimately, what you want is the behavior to stop. And you have to think about what is most likely to make the behavior stop. On very rare occasions, that's going to be money, but more often than not, it's not. It's going to be some other factor, especially with those people that you know, it's going to be some other factor that's driving it. And recognising when things are getting out of control, when individuals are starting to use end of tether language, I'm at the end of my tether, if you don't do something by Thursday, I'm going to do X, Y, Z, massive escalation, sense in which they are you feel that they are losing control, and if you know that person and you know and you have a sense of their own psychology, you've probably got a clue about what might be stressing them and what they might be capable of doing under certain situations.
And I understand on rare occasions you do actually intervene and sort of try and reason with the person.
Negotiate, I suppose, in that regard. Very, very rarely would that be appropriate. Obviously, by definition, sextortion is a criminal offence. And so whether it's paying, whether it's negotiating, we're not advocating for engaging with criminals in that regard. However, if you do have, there are levels of blackmail. There are levels of people saying, well, if you don't acknowledge me, I might just release this. When does the crime become the crime, so to speak? So there are ways in which third parties can intervene and sort of remove, because all you're doing is removing that emotional control. The threats, were it to someone like me, wouldn't have nearly as much impact or emphasis as
it just would water off a duck's
exactly.
back, and that's what you need to try and achieve, I suppose.
Exactly.
Well, what I'm hearing very clearly from both of you is that when faced with this situation, it can feel like an absolute disaster, and you might anticipate the worst case scenario, but as you were saying, Frank, the actual likelihood of this happening does not match how you feel about it, and it's really important to stand back and deal with it objectively. And I think everyone who's been listening today will clearly have got the message that this is not a hopeless situation, and that there are strategic and psychological approaches to it that can really help to manage it. So thank you so much for both of you for your insights.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Price of Fame by Farah & Co. To hear more from leading experts about protecting reputation and privacy, search Farah & Co, The Price of Fame. You can also find more episodes on YouTube by searching for Farah & Co.